Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 10th of July 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, and the newly released Churchill's Body Count, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis. Good
That's
evening,
a shock,
sir.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. You could knock me over with a feather, sir. Yeah, I was really, really surprised at that. How's it going?
Yeah, I was getting some good comments, to be honest. I mean, like, I'm not totally happy with the quality of the footage I got, but then again, it's sort of footage, let's say 10 years a long time ago.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to refresh my memory of it. Is it just the same as the original ones that you showed to me a while back?
No, I've made some slight alterations. You know, I've had Piers Morgan talking as his only Piers Morgan cam at the beginning. And then we got some a bit of music. I didn't want to disrupt it too much because otherwise I would be clashing with the music, what we're already in the documentary. But the piece of music, what I've managed to fit in, is pretty good.
Excellent, excellent. Well, maybe we can discuss it in a couple of weeks' time or something once more people have seen it, because we're going to be getting into another subject tonight. We're going to be talking a little bit about Voltaire tonight, and I must admit, I really didn't know very much about this man until you said you were keen to do a podcast on him. So where did you first hear of him, and why are you particularly keen to get into Voltaire, Dennis?
Well, I've heard of him before, to be honest. Not just, you know, reading the PDFs where I recently had. A bit of a mystery about him. Some people thought he wasn't that bad of a guy. But the more I looked into him, he's just an absolute wrecking machine. He's got a hatred for Christianity that, is beyond compare, to be honest. I don't want anyone, even Reverend Paisley, didn't hate the Catholic Church as much as this guy did.
Well, one thing that really strikes me looking through the information is how the mainstream media, they're really gushing in their praise for him. They think he's a really wonderful character. And when you look through some of the things that he was saying, it's basically the first time a lot of the narrative that's pushed on us today is the first time that was really being promoted. And of course, there's links with Freemasonry there, which they try to quieten down. But that's what really strikes me, is that they're so over the top with their praise for this man, and they try to gloss over the less savoury parts of it. And then when you actually look at the image of him, I mean, he's a real smug little bastard, isn't he? Don't you think?
Yeah, you come across one every now and again on your travels, don't you? Just a sly little bastard.
He really does look smug. Listeners will see what I mean when they see... when they see the image for tonight's podcast. We've got notes from this. We've got some notes from Wikipedia, and we've got notes from two other PDFs. And you sent the other PDFs to me, Dennis. So where did they come from? Who was it that was writing those?
Well, I think the first one, which I stumbled on, was the grand Orient of Freemasonry Uncovered, which we covered a few weeks ago. It was a series of lectures, which were put in a book, just I think in the 19th century. It was reprinted in 1950 by Monsignor George Dillon. But the other one I've been reading recently is a fascinating one. It really is a fascinating one. And this is the Scarlet and the Beast. And actually, there's three volumes to this. And as I mentioned earlier, I sent two or three pages to this girl and I who's a Catholic, and you know, she understands that the church has been infiltrated, and there's a piece on it of how they infiltrated it. And I sent her over six or seven pages, and she's ordered three volumes.
Well, it sounds very interesting just from the title alone, doesn't it? It sounds like it's something to do with Babylon and the beast,
yeah,
and the horror of Babylon, and Scarlet and the Beast, riding the beast. So the other bit, the bit about Voltaire, that was like a kind of extension to the book that we've just covered on Eastern Freemasonry. Was that sort of inspired by the book, was it? Or was it...
Well, they just had a piece on it, but I just thought there's some interesting bits here, which I didn't think I'd sent you before. So I thought, you know, you're quite capable of sorting it out if I had. But,
yeah.
You know, it's, like I said, it really goes deep. This is really about the split between the Freemasons. I call it a split between the Jews, but it's really no different. And it lists the people and the associates on the right and on the left. And it's basically the same as what I've been saying about in America today, where Trump is on the right, Obama's on the left, Hollywood's on the left, you know. So it's really, it's the same vehicle, I think.
Yeah, I really wasn't aware that there was such a split between the two, but there is. They're both the same thing, but it's like the right and the left of politics, and it's like the right and the left of Freemasonry, but they are all Freemasons, and the goal at the end of it is the same, is the New World Order. It's just that one type is more conservative, and the other type is more Marxist, I guess, and it goes back to the French Revolution, doesn't it, where it all started.
That's right back to then. And it's like English Freemasonry and French Freemasonry have had several wars over the years till eventually they join forces together and become one. And then they're infiltrated by the Illuminati as well. So all that doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, it does answer a lot of questions. You know, it goes into why how Napoleon was defeated. You know, there was two sets of Freemasons, our French and the British or English Freemason was fighting each other there. Wellington was a Freemason, and Napoleon was fighting, obviously, for the French. Fascinating, really. You know, it answers a lot of questions. Hitler doesn't come out that spectacular, but then again, any book written in 1995 is never going to have Adolf Hitler in the best of lights. They're kind of saying that he was an agent of Britain, but... There's a lot of things what's come to light since then, which, I mean, we both discovered. It never mentions the Catholic Church once. It never mentions, you know, the sign of the Concordat and the reason why Hitler came to power. It just goes on a thread about being governed by the English. And then at one point I noticed it said like that if he hadn't turned on the English, then he would have probably beat the Soviet Union. But again, he never turned on the English, as we know.
Yeah, I think your research on Hitler and Catholicism is pretty much entirely original. I mean, there's other people that have shown little bits of it before, but there's nobody that's really sort of pulled it together and pushed it and said that's what he was trying to do. He was basically going back to the Catholic Church's way of doing things, and that's what the Third Reich was. It was based on resurrecting the Holy Reich of the Catholic Church, hopefully with him leading it as the emperor, which he never got so far as he was doing.
And funny enough, they mentioned the Spear of Destiny in this PDF, but of course it's the occult and not what we discovered when we were doing the series.
Well, we've also had some requests to look at the Spear of Destiny, so maybe we'll have a look at that in another episode. Well, let's get into... finding out a little bit about Voltaire then. We'll start with an outline, and his name is Francis Mary Arouet, and he was born on the 21st of November 1694, and he died on the 30th of May 1778, and he chose to call himself Voltaire during his first incarceration in the Bastille prison, because he did end up imprisoned quite a few times. And this is from this first PDF that was the extension to the book on Eastern Freemasonry. And it says, "From the beginning, we are told the fool said in his heart, there is no God. And in the days of Voltaire, the number of these fools was indeed infinite. Never before was vice so rampant in countries calling themselves Christian. If the gospel was preached at all in that age, it was certainly to the poor. For the rich, as a rule, to which there were, thank God, many exceptions, seemed so sunk in vice as not to believe in a particle of it." And I'll just stop there, Dennis, because, I mean, this gives us a good description of what is going on. There was total debauchery was going on. There was a lot of corruption within the church, and the church was being blamed for before this. The same as the church, I think, gets blamed today. Christianity gets blamed today. But the government is corrupt. It's not just the church. It's the government as well that is corrupt. And it was mainly the rich back then that were causing all these problems. And you're saying that the poor, they weren't so bad.
Up to a point.
And Voltaire was claiming to stand up for the poor as well. And again, this has a parallel today with the Labour Party that claimed to be speaking for the working class, which, of course, they're not.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, that's the split of Freemasonry. One supports the poor and one supports the elite, so it says.
Well, they claim to, yeah. Don't they? Ridiculing religion and royalty would get Voltaire a jail sentence, and he was released into England in exile from France in 1727. And that was basically the deal that he did with the French authorities. If he left France and went into England, then they would commute his prison sentence. And when he was in England, he met a lot of the aristocracy in Britain. And Wikipedia says that he was really enamoured with the British way of doing things, because we had a constitutional monarchy, which basically meant the monarch didn't actually have any power. And I think it's really sort of sucking up to Britain, really, when you read this report. It's just making out that Voltaire's influences all came from Britain, when really his influences were Masonic influences, as we will see. He later returned to the continent with bitterness rankling in his breast against the monarchical government, which had imprisoned and exiled him, against the Bastille where he was immured, and above all against the Catholic Church and her divine founder. A master of French prose, hardly ever equalled and perhaps never excelled, and a graceful and correct versifier, his writings against morality and religion grew into immense favour with the corrupt public capable of reading during his day. He was a perfect adept in the use of ridicule, and he employed it with remorseless and blasphemous force against anything pure and sacred. "I am tired," said he, "of hearing it said that 12 men sufficed to establish Christianity, and I desire to show that it requires but one man to pull it down." Upon the news of the suppression of the Jesuits reaching him, he exclaimed, "See, one head of the Hydra has fallen. I lift my eyes to heaven and cry, crush the wretch." And that was his catchphrase, crush the wretch. And by that he meant crush Christ, basically, crush Christianity. And that was his main aim, was to destroy the church and to destroy Christianity. The same aim that the communists had and that Marxism has. And it's the same aim that we see today. What they've done today is they've managed to totally weaken the church and weaken all the teachings, so they no longer have to destroy it, because the teachings themselves have been ridiculed and mocked, and we've been told that we know better. Do you want to comment on that at all, Dennis?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because I was reading about the Pope just the other day, and the list of things that he'd done, which was so against the Catholic teachings. I mean, he wasn't really... I mean, he was replacing a Pope, but the Pope before him, Ratzinger, hadn't died, so that was unusual. But he replaced Ratzinger, and then he went on this mission of meeting all kinds of different religions, and welcome into the Vatican and allowing them to pray to Allah or to Buddha, something which, the Catholic Church was never wanted to do something like that. You know, they believed that they were the one Christian church, and all the rest were pagan. But this Pope, I mean, he talks about atheists going to heaven. He talks about, I even saw something on the internet the other day where it said that they encouraged race mixing in Europe.
Well, all sorts of things. I mean, this idea that Christianity is just the same as Judaism and the same as Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, that the Pope pushes, there are all these many different roads to God. That's a Masonic idea. That's right at the heart of Freemasonry. That's why they say you don't have to actually follow one God. You don't actually have to follow the same God. They claim that it is all the same God. But you can't, either you have truth and you have a lie. You can't say that there are two opposing truths. So either there is one God and it's Christ, or there isn't. You can't say that all these gods are truthful. So that automatically, straight away, that strips away objective truth. It strips away Christianity from the authority that it has. And to have the Pope of the Church promoting that, I mean, that's really shocking. I can remember when I was a child, and you know, I was brought up a Christian, and I was taught, well, Christianity is the truth. The others aren't the truth. And that, you know, that wasn't that long ago, and that was the main teaching. But that's changed today.
No longer.
Well, let's have a look at Voltaire's ideas. His policy, as revealed by the correspondence of Frederick II and others with him, was not to commence an immediate persecution, but first to suppress the Jesuits and all religious orders, and to secularise their goods, then to deprive the Pope of temporal authority and the Church of property and state recognition, primary and higher class education of a lay and infidelity character, or a character of infidelity, was to be established, the principle of divorce affirmed, and respect for ecclesiastics lessened and destroyed. Lastly, when the whole body of the Church should be sufficiently weakened and infidelity strong enough, the final blow was to be dealt by the sword of open, relentless persecution. A reign of terror was to spread across the whole earth, and to continue while a Christian should be found obstinate enough to adhere to Christianity. This, of course, was to be followed by a universal brotherhood without marriage, family, property, God or law, in which all men would reach that level of social degradation aimed at by the disciples of Saint Simon and carried into practice whenever possible, as attempted by the French Commune. So that's pretty harsh criticism there, but how much of that has now come true? I mean, the Church is nowhere near as powerful as it once was. The Church and state has now been separated. Education is now of a very, very base character. People aren't really taught their place in history and in civilization. They're just taught to respect the Holocaust and to be atheists and to respect homosexuality and have tolerance of things they shouldn't. Divorce, that's encouraged. There's no respect for ecclesiastics anymore. We read all about how they're kiddie fiddlers, basically, in the press, and that's all happened over the last 100 years. What are these other bits here? The reign of terror, and we saw the reign of terror in France with the French Revolution. We saw it happening a bit in Spain there, which is why Germany had to go in there. We saw it happen in Russia, and wherever we have these Marxist uprisings, we have this reign of terror. So most of that has come about. Have we now got a universal brotherhood? Have we got this? No, we haven't. We've got universal discord.
Just say to this, while you're on the subject, reading the Scarlet and the Beast actually says that there was 10 rules or plans to take down the US, and they have already now, this is Christianity in the US, they've already succeeded with 8. And like you just said, one was separating church and state, then they stopped the schools teaching religion. And obviously, you know, the 50 million aborted babies is, according to this PDF, is a sacrifice, a scientific sacrifice to the god of Babylon, Moloch, who used to be given these children a sacrifice. And if it's right, what I was watching the other day, the mayor of New York was arguing with Hannity of Fox News, and Hannity was asking him, can you please explain why he's now allowed for a baby to be 9 months to be still aborted, to which he avoided the question for at least 5 minutes. With that aside, so they've got 8 of these rules, what are plans, what they'd put together to take down Christianity. The one, number 8, you know, is remaining, well, the 2 remaining. Number 8 is, or number 9, should I say, is the, it comes, number 10 comes into play if the Christians don't agree with number 9. And number 9 is, no meetings and no mass anywhere. If you can remember the secret Masonic victory, this happened in Mexico, where a priest will put on his costume, and or people who attend the mass, and the priest will be taken outside and shot. Well, obviously, if the Christians don't, or the Catholics don't agree to this, then the final one comes in, which is what you've already stated, which is the Reign of Terror, which has happened in every single revolution, from the French to the Russian, and even the Spanish, not that long ago.
Well, and these were Voltaire's ideas. And it's interesting you bring up the abortion industry there, because I don't think they even foresaw that at this time. They didn't. There was no mention of that. And then you're saying that there was no mass, there's no church. We've got that now with the COVID regulations. That shut down all the churches, didn't it? And then a final point just to add to this, in New Zealand, under the cover of all the COVID regulations, Jacinda Ardern, she snuck through a new abortion law saying that they could murder babies right the way up to 9 months. And if one is delivered and it's not alive or it needs help, they're not supposed to help it. They're just supposed to let it die at 9 months.
That kind of, you know, kills all their arguments that they've had over the years, saying that, you know, there's no life up to such a point. I'm sure there's life at 9 months.
And, you know, this separation of church and state, we're taught to see that, oh, that's a really good thing. It's great that we have a separation between church and state. Why would anybody want that? The only people that would want that would be Jews that didn't want the church to be a part of the state. Because for Christians, and we were a Christian nation, you would want the church to be a part of the state, because it meant that the state would obey Christian law and would be forced to obey Christian law.
That's right.
And to give you the rights that you have as a Christian. Well, once you've separated the two, you don't have those rights anymore. And there's no instruction to the state to obey these Christian laws, which is, of course, why they go against them all, and why we are no longer treated as subjects. You know, subjects is somebody that you own. You're going to take care of subjects. Citizens could be from anywhere. The institution of government that was put in place was with a monarchy, with somebody that was responsible for us. He was our hero, our champion, the champion of the poor. The king was always the champion of the poor. Get rid of the king, get rid of the church. Who have you got that is standing up for the poor? You've got these communists claiming to be standing up for the poor. Standing up for our poor, though, standing up for the poor in the third world, and trying to import them into the country, because they know that will create even more chaos. But it's interesting to see that these were Voltaire's ideas.
He's been a main player.
Well, I think this was the first time that this really sort of came out there, because people talk about the Illuminati, don't they, and the plan that the Illuminati had. Yeah. But that was after this. I'm sure that was after this, wasn't it?
I think it was involved in the French Revolution. I could be wrong there, but I know he met Adam Weishaupt at that time. And so, it was thick in with the Illuminati.
Because I thought Adam Weishaupt was 18th century, because we're talking like 1738 here, 1730s.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he says we met him. I could be wrong.
Well, let's see whether we get to that. Well, let's have a look at Frederick II, because he was mentioned here. This because that there, those quotes that we just read out, they came from the correspondence with Frederick II, who was a very good friend of Voltaire's. Well, Frederick II had been initiated into Freemasonry in 1738. In 1761, he had been the acknowledged head of the Scottish Rite, himself being of the 32nd degree. And from 1750 to 1755, Voltaire had been a guest at Frederick's, where Voltaire equated fanaticism with Christianity and philosophy with illuminated masonry. So he's saying that Christianity is lunacy, that's all wrong, and the true enlightened ones are those that are following Freemasonry. And in Prussia, 20 years earlier, Voltaire had laid out for this Masonic king, Frederick II, the Masonic plan to undermine Christianity by reason. So what they were going to do is they were going to say, all these ideas that are in the Bible, they're all just fairy tales. They couldn't possibly have happened. The miracles couldn't possibly have happened. So we don't need to pay any attention to that. We need to idolize the fact that we actually have reason and we can use our reason to work out what laws and how we should be governed. Of course, that totally misses out the fact that reason was a gift from God to us in the first place. And you're supposed to use reason to see God in everything. And I mean, to atheism just seems so dumb to me, and evolution, as we've gone into before. You know, your reason, it's not blind faith that you have as a Christian. It's a faith that you come to through reason, from looking at the way that the world is and realizing that it had to have a designer, and it's all interconnected. And if it had a designer and it's all interconnected, then it should be perfect. But it's not perfect. So that tells us that there is more to life than this world. And that's what Christianity tells us. And it teaches us that there is more to life than this world. And this world is here to test us. And you can work all that out, you know, without even having to read the Bible. Just from looking around you, you can see that everything had to be created. There had to be a creator. And, you know, the creator would have created the world out of love. So it should be perfect. But it's not.
Well, what's the leaving religion out of school, though, there's very few people around today who were taught at religion at school, or even if they were, it was just basic stuff. And so they're not aware of the religious side of life. And they're not encouraged. I mean, we never see nothing on the TV. So, you know, we've got a whole country which is practically, you know, separate completely from Christianity.
Well, they're also taught straw man arguments, aren't they? They're taught that God is just some old man in the sky. It's just the sky God.
Yeah.
And part of that comes from this teaching from Voltaire, which is the next bit, because he taught people to lie. So where people couldn't undermine Christianity with reason, then they were to lie. He says, in his attacks upon religion, he falsified history and fact. He made a principle of lying and taught the same vice to his followers. Writing to his disciple Theriot, he says, "Lying is a vice when it does evil. It is a great virtue when it does good. Be therefore more virtuous than ever. It is necessary to lie like a devil, not timidly and for a time, but boldly and always." And that reminds me of the way that it, in the Talmud, it teaches the Jews to lie and says that they should lie to the Gentiles, and they take an oath. They can take an oath once a year to be absolved of all their oaths for the rest of the year. So when they make an oath to a Gentile, it's like they got their fingers crossed behind them. They can break that oath. And also that, you see the same thing in Islam, where they're taught that, they can lie to the kafirs. It might be called takfiri. I can't remember the exact name of it in Islam. But it's the same thing in Islam and the Talmud. And obviously, you know, this is a Masonic idea which comes from Judaism.
Well, don't you just hate a liar, though? I mean, you know, it's always been a pet hate of mine. When you know someone's blatantly lying, you just really haven't got time for them.
There is nothing more annoying. And what he's saying here is that it's some kind of a virtue to do that. So he's basically turning everything upside down. He's doing the opposite. Which is, again, is a Masonic principle or a Gnostic principle of blending the two opposites. That's why they have the hermaphrodite as like a holy symbol, something to aspire to. And they say that there is no absolute good and there is no absolute evil. And to understand the two, you have to have balance, then you have to experience both of them. And this is a Gnostic teaching. And this is where you can end up thinking like this, that, you know, lying can be a great vice, a great virtue rather, as what he's saying here. Be more virtuous than ever. He's telling people to lie as much as they can. And if everybody starts lying, then nobody can be trusted, and evil men will rise to the top, basically, won't they?
I would think so. I mean, you know, to live in a world where everybody lies, I say you can't trust anyway.
Well, if you teach everybody else to lie and then you insist amongst your little Masonic group that everybody speaks the truth to one another, but you teach everybody else to lie, then you're going to have an advantage, aren't you? It's the same as teaching everybody else that you should be welcoming to refugees and celebrating diversity, while within your own group expelling refugees, not allowing them in into your country, and insisting that your people only marry your own kind. You know, it's the same principle, isn't it? Teach everybody else to do something that's going to be harmful to them, while not doing it yourself. And it's right. Hypocrisy, isn't it? But is that same principle?
Well, it's easier to have a lead a bad life than a good life. Far easier.
Much easier. He was rich as well. I mean, he came into a lot of money, and he came from a like fairly noble sort of upbringing, and then he actually came into a lot of money, and he was helped by these kings as well. This Frederick II, I think he's called Frederick the Great. So he had a lot of wealth. He had a lot of money whilst claiming to be speaking up for the poor. Let's have a look at how corrupt the aristocracy were, how corrupt he was. He lived without shame and even ostentatiously in open adultery. And looking through the Wikipedia page, I mean, he has loads of affairs. In one instance, he's there with one married woman and her husband, all living together in one place. And he seduces his niece, you know, which is close enough to incest. So he totally debauched, and this man is being held up as being a hero for the modern age by the left and by people that study at university. They'll tell you that Voltaire was a great writer and a great poet and somebody who stood up for free speech and that challenged corruption and challenged authority. And he was an immoral man that was seeking to bring chaos into the world. He laughed at
I love to know what they did teach at universities. It's just Marx and Voltaire, I think, isn't it?
I think we're lucky we didn't go. I think we're lucky we didn't go, Dennis.
Yeah, for sure.
University of Life. He laughed at every moral restraint. He preached libertinage and practiced it. He was the guest and the inmate of the court of Frederick of Prussia, where crime reached proportions impossible to speak of. And lastly, as a coward, a liar, a hypocrite, and a panderer to the basest passions of humanity, he was finally, like Satan, a murderer if he had the power to be so. Writing to Damilaville, he says, "The Christian religion is an infamous religion, an abominable hydra, which must be destroyed by 100 invisible hands. It is necessary that the philosophers should curse through the streets to destroy it, as missionaries curse over the earth and sea to propagate it. They ought to dare all things, risk all things, even to be burned, in order to destroy it. Let us crush the wretch." And that's that same saying that he says. And again, this is similar to the hatred that you see in the Talmud for Christianity.
Exactly.
Very similar to it. You know, I mean, it's cursed in that. It's part of Judaism to spit on the cross and spit when you walk past the church and say in their prayers they curse Christians. I mean, it's well documented. I'm not saying, you know, being anti-Semitic saying this. This is a part of their religion. You can read about it in Eisenmenger's book, The Traditions of the Jews. I think he wrote 150 years ago. That's a good book that explains it all. So he really, really has a hatred for Christianity here. In a letter to Frederick II, King of Prussia, dated 5th of January 1767, he wrote, "Ours, i.e. the Christian religion, is assuredly the most ridiculous, the most absurd, and the most bloody religion which has ever infected this world. Your Majesty will do the human race an eternal service by extirpating this infamous superstition." And remember, this guy, the King of Prussia, he's only the King of Prussia because of the Christian Church and because the tradition of Christianity is to have a monarchy.
Yeah.
You know, he's biting the hand that feeds him here, the King of Prussia is. A lot of these royals were. And this is really why, you know, why royalty, we don't really have working monarchies anymore, because the kings themselves fell to temptation. Yeah, yeah. Everybody can fall to temptation, even the best of us. Well, he laid the foundation stones for the New World Order. It never was the intention of this man to let his teachings die or to just beat the air, so to speak, with mere words. He was determined that his fatal gospel should be perpetuated and should bring forth as speedy as possible its fruits of death. Even in his lifetime, we have evidence that he constantly conspired with his associates for this end, and that with them he concocted in secret both the means by which his doctrines should reach all classes in Europe and the methods by which civil order and Christianity might best be destroyed. He called into existence the most efficacious means possible for its extension among men and for the wished-for destruction of the Church, of Christian civilization, and of every form of existing Christianity. This was the spread amongst those already demoralized by Voltairianism of Freemasonry and its cognate systems of secret atheistic organization. So it was carried on by Freemasonry. But I would suspect that he got a lot of his ideas from Freemasonry in the first place, rather than the other way around. But what they're saying is that Freemasonry continued what Voltaire had started. And that's how we get to this atheistic stage that we're at today.
Sad.
Well, let's have a look, a little closer look at Voltaire's connections with Freemasonry. Wikipedia says that Voltaire was initiated into Freemasonry a little over a month before his death. So just a month before he died, according to Wikipedia. Obviously, that's not true. On the 4th of April 1778, he attended La Loge des Neuf Soirs in Paris and became an entered apprentice Freemason. According to some sources, Benjamin Franklin urged Voltaire to become a Freemason, and Voltaire agreed, perhaps only to please Franklin. Again, this is Wikipedia. However, Franklin was merely a visitor at the time Voltaire was initiated. The two only met a month before Voltaire's death, and their interactions with each other were brief. And the truth is, by the time of his death, Voltaire had actually been a member of English Freemasonry for 50 years. So Wikipedia covers this up by only looking at French Freemasonry and saying he wasn't a Freemason until a month before his death. Yeah, but in actual fact, he'd been an English Freemason for 50 years. 51 days before his death, he joined French Freemasonry. Yet the Masonic great architect of the universe was not there to comfort him. Plunging headlong into a Christless eternity, Voltaire shrieked his last words in the fury of despair and agony, "I am abandoned by God and man." And there are quite a few different reports of his actual last days and his last words. So, you know, I couldn't say for certain that that is exactly what happened, because there are conflicting reports.
Strangely enough, the same happened to Anton LaVey when he was on his deathbed, and suddenly he started to scream, "Oh God, what have I done?" So who knows?
Is he no longer with us then, Anton LaVey, the Satanist?
No, he died a while back. But his wife was at his bedside. It was his wife who said that he went into a panic as soon as he realised that he realised something had gone wrong. He either felt the heat of hell or something, but he was certainly screaming out that he'd done wrong.
Well, we've got one of the reports here that we'll look at. Dylan quotes a Dr. Fruchon who witnessed the awful spectacle of Voltaire's death. "With that all who have been seduced by the writings of Voltaire had been witnesses of his death, it would be impossible to hold out from becoming a Christian in the face of such an awful spectacle. Depraved men will boldly shake their fist in the face of Almighty God when riding the crest of youth, health, and popularity. But when faced with death, they cower. So it was with Voltaire. On his deathbed, he was in extreme loneliness and fear. He thought of the inventions his corrupt mind had devised against Jesus Christ and his church. When he lay dying, horror filled his eyes as he cried out, 'O God, O Christ, I wish that I had paid attention to your words more. Now that I am dying, I feel the fires of hell. O God, O Christ.'" And in contrast to that, Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry reports only the fact of Voltaire's death and the sorrow that it caused his fellow Masons.
Well, they will do, won't they?
Yeah, so why weren't the Masons there when he actually died then to give a conflicting report? So that sort of tends to say that this is a truthful report, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's one of the leading figures in this movement. Very strange.
Well, as we said, he's sort of continued on after he died, unfortunately, because of his well-known criticism of the church, which he had refused to retract before his death. Voltaire was denied a Christian burial in Paris, but friends and relations managed to bury his body secretly at the Abbey of Celliers in Champagne, where Marie-Louise's brother was the abbey. His heart and brain were embalmed separately. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you would think that if he had these friends and he was such an antichrist, the last place that they would want to have him buried is in an abbey.
Yeah.
And yet, that's what they did. On the 11th of July, 1791, the National Assembly of France, regarding Voltaire as a forerunner of the French Revolution, had his remains brought back to Paris and enshrined in the Pantheon. An estimated 1 million people attended the procession, which stretched throughout Paris. There was an elaborate ceremony, including music composed for the event by André Gretry. So they're trying to sort of mirror Christianity here, aren't they? With like enshrining a body, embalming a body, yeah. Having relics, like holy people, they have relics of them. They dig the bodies up and apparently they haven't started decomposing and they smell nice. They're incorruptible. And the same thing was done with Lenin, wasn't it? He was embalmed.
Still there,
and,
isn't he? Yeah.
And put on display.
Embalmed.
Yeah, it's like a perverse mockery of Christian saints, I think.
Yeah, could well be.
And it shows you how important he was to the French Revolution for them to do that.
Yeah, wear it out.
Well, they say here that they regarded him as a forerunner. And this was in 1791. And when was it he died there? 1778, it says. And yet in 1791. So 20 years later is when they had the revolution, roughly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's also a bit of an anti-fascist. In actual fact, the communists hold him up as an anti-fascist today, despite the fact there was no fascism back then. Or really, it admits that, you know, there has always been fascism. It just wasn't called that. Voltaire's best-known histories are The History of Charles XII, The Age of Louis XIV, and his essay on the customs and the spirit of the nations. He broke from the tradition of narrating diplomatic and military events and emphasized customs, social history, and achievements in the arts and sciences. So social science, basically. So he was at the front there by promoting social science, by looking at history and looking at the social side of it. The essay on customs traced the progress of world civilization in a universal context, rejecting both nationalism and the traditional Christian frame of reference. So he traced civilization as a citizen of the world, the same way that people are taught today to look at things. Yeah, one race, and we're all a human race, and African Negroes have just as much right to medical and technological advances as the white people that created them. You know, that sort of logic.
Yeah, it's early communism, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I say. He was the anti-fascist because he's promoting these ideas. The essay on customs traced the progress of world civilization. Oh, just repeated that bit, didn't I? Influenced by Bossuet's Discourse on Universal History, he was the first scholar to attempt seriously a history of the world, eliminating theological frameworks and emphasizing economics, culture, and political history. So he eliminated the church, basically, eliminated Christianity, tried to promote a history of the world without including in it the worship of God, the creator of the world.
Yeah.
So he's right. You know, before the atheists as well, isn't he?
He always had a burning desire of hatred, unmatched, as far as I can see.
Well, he really, I mean, this is 1682, Oh no, he was influenced by this book on in 1682. But he was promoting the New World Order narrative back then. He treated Europe as a whole rather than a collection of nations. And he was the first to imagine a debt of medieval culture to Middle Eastern civilization. So two things there. He was saying that, looking at the way that the EU looks at Europe today and says that, you know, yeah, we don't have sovereignty, we're not separate nations. In actual fact, we can just import people from all over the world and they can be European. And secondly, he was the first to claim that we have a debt to Islam, when in actual fact it was Islam's conquering of the Eastern Roman Empire, the Christian Roman Empire, that gave them access to the Greek classics, which is where they got their knowledge of numbers from and alchemy from, which we then got back from them. But in actual fact, the only reason they had it in the first place is because they had conquered the Eastern Rome, Constantinople.
Yeah, it reminds me very much of Kalergi, with his no doubt Kalergi read Voltaire
and enslaved them. And enslaved them. I actually saw a really interesting BBC page and apologetics, basically trying to claim that Islamic slavery was in actual fact a good thing. And it talked about how some of these slaves were given military training and achieved very high positions, looking after the aristocracy. Basically, those slaves were kidnapped in a blood tax, where each family in places like Bulgaria had to hand over their firstborn child at 4 years old so that they could be trained up as an assassin to then go back and kill the family. And the BBC put it, it was a great honour for them. They were given military training and, So, and he was really starting this, isn't he, by saying that Christendom owed a debt, a cultural debt to Middle Eastern civilization.
We always owe a debt.
Or a debt to people living in tents. Although he repeatedly warned against political bias on the part of the historian, he did not miss many opportunities to show his own intolerance of the church through the ages. So there's hypocrisy throughout all his work. And I've slightly altered this. This is Wikipedia's bits here. I slightly altered it because they're trying to say that it's great that he showed this intolerance of the church. But in actual fact, it's basically doing the opposite of what he was warning against, isn't it? Don't show any political bias. But the very fact that he showed this bias against the church, that is a political bias that he showed.
Don't worry about me. You can change Wikipedia as many times as you want.
Voltaire advised scholars that anything contradicting the normal course of nature was not to be believed. And again, that we have to look past that, because as nationalists, we support the natural order and we believe in the natural order. But what he's referring to here is that anything supernatural is not to be believed. So therefore, Christianity is not to be believed. Miracles aren't to be believed. Healing isn't to be believed. There's nothing more than what you can see and touch. There's no such thing as spirit, no such thing as soul.
No, well, let him play with a Ouija board for a couple of weeks.
Well, again, I mean, you can imagine that he was probably into all of that if he was into the Freemasonry and the occult, but that wasn't what he was teaching everybody else. And when we talked about Eastern Freemasonry the other week, we made that contrast between the natural and the supernatural. And at the time, the supernatural was referring to Christianity, whereas what they classed as natural is what we would class today as base and animal, basically. They were contrasting supernatural of Christ and the church against the promotion of the natural with the Jews, who wanted to set themselves up as the Messiah and leading the world in fulfillment of their Talmudic prophecies.
They will come again.
Although he found evil in the historical record, he fervently believed that reason and expanding literacy would lead to progress. So he didn't believe that fighting evil with good would lead to progress. He thought that reason and expanding literacy would lead to progress. So instead of appealing to the higher good, the objective good, the objective God, the God that is above all of it, he believes that man himself can lead man to progress.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what we have today. This is how we got into the situation that we are in today, is by believing that we can make our own laws and that we know better than our ancestors and that we know better than divinely revealed instruction, which is
where can we go?
He said, all races are the same. In a 1763 essay, Voltaire supported the toleration of other religions and ethnicities. He said, it does not require great art or magnificently trained eloquence to prove that Christians should tolerate each other. I, however, am going further. I say that we should regard all men as our brothers. What, the Turk, my brother, the Chinaman, my brother, the Jew, the Siam? Yeah. Yes, without doubt. Are we not all children of the same father and creatures of the same God?
This is Marxism.
Yeah.
This is what Hitler spoke about.
Well, it's like the devil wears a very fancy coat when he tries to deceive you, doesn't he? You know, they dress it up in these good-sounding words as if, oh, yes, well, this is all just about brotherly love. It's not. It's about destroying the diversity that was created in the world.
Yeah, I think Hitler said something on the lines that Marxism is like a mass psychology where you can deny your own brother and sister, but yet call an African or an Indian your brother and sister. Which is true.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That is the main criticism of Marxism, isn't it? You know, it claims to be looking out for the working class, but it's looking out for the working class on the other side of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of the working class here. It's whatever they can make use of to take over. And then when they take over...
What else then? Then they'll dump them. No matter whether for our friend, they'll partner up with people. They'll use ISIS, for instance, to bring down Libya, America, things like that. But then next week they'll bomb them in Afghanistan.
And when they do take over, they just destroy things. They're just agents of chaos. You just look at what happened to the Soviet Union, and it was just run into the ground. Millions of people killed, but things just destroyed for no reason. You know, I don't think it ever made a profit. It was continually having to be helped out by the international banks. Communism.
Yeah, for I read a little bit on Trotsky, believe it or not, because I didn't really know that a great deal about him. I know he went to the Red Army and he got an ice pick in his head in Mexico, and Stalin had sent someone out to kill him, but it was actually worse than Stalin. Can you believe that one? He was an absolute nightmare.
Maybe we'll have to have a look at. Maybe we'll have to have a look at him at some time. Let's just have a look at this. I mean, because what he's saying here, because on the surface of it, I mean, it sounds quite good, doesn't it? You know, we should be treating other races as our brothers, but it doesn't work. What you have to do is you have to treat your own race like your brothers, and then leave the other race to treat their own people like their brothers. If you do that for them, then they're never going to learn Christian charity and Christian mercy, and they're never going to learn to do things for themselves, and they're never going to progress, and they're never going to become virtuous, because you're going to be doing everything for them. And at the same time, your own people are going to be suffering. Your own people that should be benefiting from your mercy and from your charity aren't benefiting from it, because it's being diverted to somewhere else. And if you give your charity to somewhere else and you raise up somebody else from another group, say, they aren't going to reciprocate that charity by raising up somebody from your group. They're going to spend that money in amongst their own group. So it's been siphoned out of your group and into their group. I think there's a Bible verse that says, cast your bread upon the waters, for it will return to you. And that's true if it's within your own group.
Yeah. Well, we see examples today in Britain hardly owns anything. Even though the football grounds are owned by, foreign billionaires and Arabs.
We're not talking about persecuting these people either. We're just saying leave them alone to develop at their own pace and don't interfere.
Yeah.
Because they don't thank you for interfering. They hate us for interfering.
Yeah.
All these attacks on us after everything that we've done for them, doing away with slavery, freeing them all, and now they show their gratitude by pulling down our statues and calling us all racists. even though we freed them all. Finally, he's become like a saint to the revolution, like an anti-saint. Under the French Third Republic, anarchists and socialists often invoked Voltaire's writings in their struggles against militarism, nationalism, and the Catholic Church. The section condemning the futility and imbecility of war in the Dictionnaire Philosophique was a frequent favourite, as were his arguments that nations can only grow at the expense of others. And I would take total issue at that. Nations can only grow by devoting time and energies to their own nations and not devoting it to others, because it's at the expense of your own nation, isn't it? If you're going to be doing things for the others. Following the liberation of France from the Vichy regime in 1944, Voltaire's 250th birthday was celebrated in both France and the Soviet Union, which shows you the loyalties of the Vichy, people that took over France, honouring him as one of the most feared opponents of the Nazi collaborators and someone whose name symbolises freedom of thought and hatred of prejudice, superstition and injustice. This evil man. It's incredible. They say he was one of the most feared opponents of the Nazi collaborators, and yet he'd been dead for 250 years.
I'd like him to meet the SS.
I think they would have had some choice words.
I'm sure people who see his picture on the website of know what I mean.
Well, there's a famous quote as well. There's a famous quote. I may not agree with what you say, but I would fight to the death to ensure that you are free to say it. And most people, when you say that quote, they will say, "Oh, well, that's Voltaire," but it's not. Didn't come from Voltaire at all.
Yeah,
it came from somebody writing about Voltaire. I think in about 1910, and they wrote a biography of him, and they said, "Well, this is what he would have said if he could have said it," and they claimed that as taken from a quote in a letter that he had written. But then when you check the letter that he had actually written, there's nothing like it in there at all.
So yeah, it's just made up. He would have just made this up.
It's a very famous quote, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But
it's didn't come from Voltaire, not from the man that said it's a virtue to lie.
Well, unfortunately, he escaped burning at the stake, which many of these people ended up.
Unfortunately,
can't get them all.
Yeah, didn't actually look that deeply into how it was that he actually died. What was it? Was it syphilis or something? I guess it probably was.
I think it could have been
where we're going with women. Yeah, it's pretty common, wasn't it? Well, we're nearing the end here, Dennis, but before we finish, I just want to say to the listeners that we do require donations to keep the website going, and we have got a Bitcoin wallet. It's at the bottom of every page. It's very easy to purchase some Bitcoin. You can do that at localbitcoins.com. You can just get the Bitcoin sent to your wallet and then send them off from your wallet to our wallet, and that way it's all kept anonymous. And thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.